The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Giannis got his money. Almost a quarter billion. Did he make a mistake? You sign a contract for almost a quarter billion. You almost cannot make a mistake by definition. What do you have to do for the money? I mean, congratulations, Giannis. By the way, who's made $100 million in his career already. Now he just got another quarter billion coming. And the sick thing is, because there's a salary cap and a max contract, in fact, he's necessarily underpaid. In other words, he's worth more than they're giving him because they're not allowed to give him more. If they were allowed to give him more, some other team would give him more than the Bucks. And New York, by the way, that's one of the reasons the Knicks stink. Because usually incompetent management or ownership in New York City, you can buy your way out of it. You may not buy championships, that's hard, but at least you can buy your way into respectability, right? But the convoluted nature of a salary cap league causes all kinds of problems. And especially an incompetently run franchise like the Knicks. By the way, I'll give this new Knicks front office, this new regime, a little while. They deserve a little while to see what they can do. But this is how Dolan operates. That miserable owner, Dolan. This is how he operates. Every couple of years, it's a new regime, and then you have to give him a chance. And guys like me come out and say, hey, give him a chance. And everyone's like, give him a chance. And two or three years later, it's a new regime because the last one didn't work out because a fish rots from the head down, and what the Knicks have is a rotten fish head. Anyway, Giannis got his money to stay in Milwaukee. Now, markets like Milwaukee never attract top free agents. It's never happened before. Never. Cleveland, because LeBron was born in Akron, grew up in Akron. So he re-signs with Cleveland eventually, but he only does it because they wind up with Kyrie and enough assets to get Kevin Love. And he's from there. Boy, the Bucks better hope the next superstar coming up is from Milwaukee and really wants to play there. Because they're not going to get a guy like that. It just doesn't happen. The only desirable markets, and for people living in Milwaukee who are going, hey, what's wrong with Milwaukee? What I mean by that is desirable to an NBA superstar. So what does that mean? It means a warm weather, not just to an NBA superstar, to everyone, for these reasons. Warm weather, guys prefer the warm weather. I've lived in New York and L.A. I can tell you the warm weather's better. I like the seasons and everything, but, you know, when it's sunny 300 days a year, that helps. So, you know, L.A., Miami, but also places like with just good weather, like San Francisco, Silicon Valley's right there too. You can just hot weather, even if it's not perfect, Texas, Houston, Dallas. Warm weather places, that's one. Two, if you don't have warm weather, and maybe even if you do, a cosmopolitan place, not just a metropolitan place, but a kind of big, important cultural center that has some cachet. That's good to maneuver with these guys' brands, right? And plus, there's something to be said for the kind of desirability to live in that kind of market anyway. And that's not Milwaukee. It's metropolitan. I wouldn't call it cosmopolitan. And then, of course, do you live in a tax-free state, a no-tax state, no state income tax? So that applies to some states, but not Wisconsin. Milwaukee is in a tough spot. So how do they build a team? They need to draft well, hope someone's a superstar that they can pick in the draft. That happened, Giannis. And then you have to never play yourself cheap. Any asset you have to pay and hold on to because you got to be willing to pay luxury tax. You know, you're being subsidized by the rich markets, right? So you got to use that money to reinvest in your team. Because unlike the NFL with a hard cap, when people yell at owners for not paying players, I'm always thinking, but they're not lining their pockets with that money. All the owners spend the same, give or take, in the NFL. What are people talking about? But in the NBA, you have a soft cap, so you also have a luxury tax. In other words, you can pay your own players to keep them, but then you may have to pay a luxury tax. And Milwaukee didn't want to pay that. They played everyone cheap. They wanted to take the money that they make from the, forget about the fact it's a real estate deal and the equity constantly increases in all these teams in the NBA. The Milwaukee owners also wanted to operate at a profit and take the money that the rich teams pay into the luxury tax and gets redistributed and line their own pockets with it. That's what happened. So they let Brogdon leave. And Brogdon was not a great player, but a good player. And even if they felt they had to overpay for him, he would be an asset going forward that you could use in a deal to get a superstar in there to play next to Giannis. Now, remember what I've said. In the past, a great big always needs a guy who's just about as good as him, who's not a big. A ball handler, a playmaker. Kareem needed Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson. He got 6 championships with them, 0 without. Shaq needed Kobe Bryant and Dwayne Wade. 4 championships with them, 0 without. Even Penny Hardaway, who was a great player, was not good enough. Penny was great. He wasn't Shaq great. Kobe and Wade were basically Shaq great. He got chips with them. That's how it works. AD had Jrue Holiday. Didn't come near a championship. Got with LeBron James, got a championship. He had another guy, not a big, just as great as him, or better. And that's what Giannis really needs, but they were unable to do it. They didn't do it. They didn't have Brogdon to use in a deal. Chris Paul was available this offseason. They didn't get him. I love me some Jrue Holiday. But Jrue Holiday's a combo guard. And Chris Paul can also play off the ball. Why not? What's wrong with having Jrue Holiday and Chris Paul? Now all of a sudden you would look at that team and say, oh, yeah, maybe they're going to win the championship this year. But I can tell you, I don't think they will. Even had they gotten Bogdanovich, and they blew that. They had the deal done, and then it got undone. But even Bogdanovich, who's a very good player, with his shooting and his passing, even Bogdanovich with Jrue Holiday and Brook Lopez and Chris Middleton, anyone would pick them to beat the Lakers? How many? Not many. I think we all agree that the Lakers would probably win. So that was a problem. But having made that mistake already, the Bucks owners, like the way the CBA is organized now, is structured now, if you've been with the same team the whole time, it used to be no max type player ever left before 7 years or 6 years when they could demand a trade because you leave too much money on the table. And now the NBA's deal, the way they've structured things, is harder and harder for a player to leave after even 6 or 7 years because they're going to leave a lot of money on the table. The Supermax extension, the Supermax contract, if you played X number of years on the same team, you know, you're a max contract player, you're already making the max, results in these kind of contracts, like what Damian Lillard got and Giannis got. And by the way, it keeps superstars in their markets, those who are inclined to stay. A guy like, you know, LeBron or KD or Harden, they're thinking, I got to get a championship, right? KD was like, I got to get a championship. I'll leave some money on the table. I'll go to Golden State. I want to win. It's too important to me. But guys like Giannis and Lillard, I don't think it's any less important for them that they win. But they had a real sense that I think they saw, you know, first of all, it's their nature of their personalities. But they also saw the way people reacted to Kevin Durant ring chasing. Now, KD deserves a lot of praise for going to Brooklyn because that wasn't a that's in the bag type move, right? He's going to have to go out and do it now. And of course, well, he has Kyrie. I mean, everyone needs a crime partner, of course. But the KD going to the Golden State Warriors was ridiculous. It's like they won 73 games. They should have won the chip. You add an MVP caliber player, they can't lose, and they couldn't. They didn't. I think Giannis saw that and thought, you know, not, it's important to win championships, but to stay where I am and win a championship, that's a big thing. And when you combine that with the fact that he'd lose tens and tens of millions of dollars had he walked out the door, you see what happened. Now the question is, can he win a chip with the Bucks? Because no one's ever going to sign there. Not a top you know, free agent. Do they have enough to win? Is Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton enough to get Giannis over the top? I'm telling you, they're not. I love Jrue Holiday. He did such... I mean, they played great defense as a team on Damian Lillard a couple years ago. The Pelicans did. But Jrue Holiday was the guy on Lillard. He did as good a job as a defender could possibly do. And he's a big shot maker with the chips on the line. And Middleton in a good year is an all-star. And Brook Lopez in a good year can really stretch the floor and defend the rim. But you're hoping DiVincenzo turns into a real guy now. And even that might be enough. It's so gangster to win a championship in the NBA. It's so hard to do. You need, ideally, 2 MVP caliber players And even then, you better get the details right. The Lakers not only had maybe the one and two best players in the world last year, they got the details right in addition to that and won a championship. But that's what it takes. Kawhi and Paul George and a nice supporting cast with Montrezl Harrell and Patrick Beverley and all these. Lou Williams, not enough. Not enough, couldn't get out of the second round. Because you run into a Denver team with Jamal Murray and Jokic both playing at near MVP levels, and you got an ascending star in Porter Jr. Everywhere you look in the league, you got these, you know, several all-stars or near MVPs playing together. Giannis is an MVP caliber player. Is there a single other player on that team that is a perennial all-star? There's not. And Andre Snelling was on of ESPN fame, was on this show yesterday telling me that the structure of the Bucks is such, he believes, you know, they have Drew Holiday now as a shot maker and they can keep defenses honest. They won't just be able to wall up, you know, against Giannis. And that'll be the difference. He believes they'll win a championship in the next 3 years. I don't, unless they have an ace up their sleeve. That was Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Keyshawn Johnson joins me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Key, you like what you saw from Lamar the other night?
Yeah, it's fine. I told you that the last time we talked. He's fine. What is there not to like, right?
No, it's not just fine. He came out, those were high stakes. You know, I've mentioned on this show many times, he's almost undefeated, even against good teams. He's beaten a ton of good teams in his life.
Yeah, Mac.
But when the lights shine brightest.
You're knocking him a little bit, though.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is my beef with Lamar is not he can't beat you from the pocket. He can't. No, I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying you got to beat the Chiefs if you're in the AFC. You got to beat the Roethlisberger Steelers if you're the Ravens, and you got to win in the playoffs. And he's 0-6 in those situations. So here he is, Monday Night Football, spotlights on him, has to come out with cramps. They bring him back on fourth down. Baker and them are feeling themselves. The Browns are coming up in the world. Their playoff hopes are on the line. And he came through. I haven't seen that yet, Key.
Yeah, and everybody has a bright moment in their career where all of a sudden something happens that you've never seen before. And you say he's 0-6 in those moments. The regular season, yeah, he's lost to them. And in the playoffs, he's lost two games. But he's still young in his career. You know, and I tell people this all the time. If some of these other quarterbacks had a total yards of 300 yards, nobody would say anything because it would be through the air. The fact that a guy can get a 150 in the air and a 150 on the ground, the total is still 300 yards. It's still two touchdowns. It's still productive. And if that's how they're going to win, then that's great. What they can't afford to do is fall behind. And you know, it becomes a tough situation when they fall behind. And we saw them fall behind slightly. Not really. It wasn't a 10-point deficit or 14-point deficit. But they were still able to rally in the end and kick the 55-yarder to go home. It was a good thing to see.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm with it. You win how you win. And when you consider his age, like, you know who else is his age? Sam Darnold. Like, think about that. And people are like, can one day Sam Darnold develop into Lamar's already been a league MVP? Yeah, I'm with that. That's great. But what I love
is Sam Darnold got you coaching the team.
Yeah,
excuse
right.
me. You might do a better job than Adam Gase coaching Sam Darnold.
Adam Gase, you know who's the happiest dude in the world? When Hugh Jackson looks at Adam Gase, he goes, oh, thank God. Oh, they've forgotten all about me. Adam Gase is unbelievable. He's in a class by himself right now. But, Key, this is what I'm saying. It's one I hear what you're saying, like these guys have bright moments and here's one for him, but especially on a Monday night game where the Browns really need to beat either the Ravens or the Steelers. You know, they have the game in hand. Lamar Jackson goes out. As soon as he goes out, the Browns come back on him and they take the lead. And to come in on fourth down and to throw a strike for a 44-yard play that results in a touchdown, the go-ahead touchdown, you see Baker on the sidelines nodding like, okay, my turn. Leads them right down the field. They score again. And then Lamar takes over, four consecutive completions, and they kick the field goal to win. I have not seen a game like that from him in his career. I think it bodes well, not only for this next stretch of games where they need to win them all to make the playoffs probably, but maybe even in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, I mean, you go back, think about it last year, what he did to the Rams on a Monday night. I mean, he has some stuff. It's just not traditional stuff. It's not what your eyes have seen for the last 25 years. You've seen different style quarterbacking with Michael Vick and a Cam Newton, but you haven't seen this. So to you and to other people, they look at it and go, well, that's very unorthodox. I don't know that they can win that way. They really can. If they can continue to play the way that they plan and just don't fall behind and their defense rise to the occasion and not give up 47 points, they certainly can win.
That's something I do like about Lamar. You know, they say youth is wasted on the young. To hear Michael Vick talk now, he's like, you know, almost shaking his head like, man, I didn't, you know, like he took it for granted early on. And you can think of Lamar as Vick 2.0 or maybe 3.0 because RG3 got in there for a minute. But Lamar is like a dude with that kind of next level talent who's not taking it for granted. It seems like he has leadership skills. Like his teammates like him, like they can rally around him, and like he knows what it takes. And now the question is, can he be accurate enough down the field when they need him to be? Because they're not always going to be playing with a lead key. He's going to have to do that sometimes. I saw him do it Monday night, but he's going to have to repeat that.
He is, and I think he'll be able to. The more he does it, the more comfortable he gets, and the more Houdini-like performances he'll have.
Now, here's the question. I've heard you defend this quarterback also. Jared Goff and the Los Angeles Rams. Key, I love what I'm seeing from the Rams. And when you look at the quality of their wins recently, the teams they're playing and beating and shutting down, it really is impressive. They've beaten a whole bunch of good teams, including, I want to say, they lost that game to the Niners. The Niners play good defense. They beat who? Arizona,
opponent.
The Patriots. They beat the Bucs. They beat a lot of good teams. What do you think the Rams' Super Bowl chances are?
They go as far as Jared Goff goes. As long as he doesn't trick it off with turnovers, they'll be right there in the mix. It'll be interesting because what they should hope and pray for, though, is that, well, I guess it doesn't really matter. Well, I guess it does matter. They really need to try to figure out how to get home field advantage.
Yeah.
Because if Jared Goff has to go on the road in a cold environment like a Seattle or a Green Bay, it can get tough on him. You know, going back down to Tampa or going into New Orleans, and that's not – I mean, that's warm weather, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those other two spots, it gets cold and slippery.
Speaking of which
– he doesn't play well in the cold.
Speaking of which, given the fact that the Saints were shocked by an Eagles team where the quarterback, look at that, wasn't trying to do too much, just doing what the coach asked, and they wound up winning the game. I guess it wasn't all the offensive line with the Eagles. But anyway, the Saints got to be worried about the Packers right now. Like, to me, Key, when I look at the teams that really need that bye, there's only one bye in each conference this year. I think the Saints could get out of the NFC. Not if they have to go to Green Bay. That what you just said about the Rams, to me, like the Saints are a different team at home. And who do they have this week? The Kansas City Chiefs. What do you see?
You know, I want to know what's going to happen at the quarterback spot. Is it Taysom Hill or is it Jameis Winston? Because it won't probably be Drew Brees, right? And I think when you look at what happened in Philly, that team got energized with Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. I don't have them going into Kansas City and beating the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
That game's in Kansas City, right?
Where is the game? That's a good question. Raj will find out. Raj, why don't you get right on that?
Yeah, Raj, do something.
New Orleans, yeah. It's in New Orleans.
My nap.
It's in New Orleans.
Okay, so that's better. That's better for New Orleans. It's better for New Orleans. It'll be interesting to see what they do at the quarterback spot because, you know, they're going to have to match that intensity that Kansas City's going to bring. Kansas City's spotting people points nowadays, man. Spotted Miami 14 points and went and got them.
So you're saying
it's like, here you go. You can have these points. We come get you later.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's like they're toying with teams. But this is something KC Joyner, the football scientist, says on this show, Key, that, in fact, you want a shootout with the Chiefs. That, in fact, that gives you the best chance. And Jameis would seem to be the quarterback to engage in a shootout. High risk because he was going to turn the ball over, and, you know, you're probably going to lose a shootout with the Chiefs, but you're probably going to lose anyway. Are you saying that Jameis gives you a better chance to win in a shootout with the Chiefs than Taysom Hill does in a kind of ball control offense against the Chiefs?
I think so.
Hmm. I think so too, actually.
They gonna score some points. Yep. Man, they're gonna put that thing up in the air. Yep. Indoors. Oh man, he's gonna let it fly.
Yeah. And he might turn the ball over and they might wind up, but you know, you're probably gonna lose anyway. You might as well load up and see what you can do. Is Key gone? Is Key still there? Raj ruthlessly cuts Keyshawn Johnson off. Ruthless, Raj. Didn't you used to produce Key on the radio, Raj? Keyshawn Johnson joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Please tell Key that I say thank you for appearing on the show. We like to treat our guests well in spite of Raj's he's an inveterate rudeness.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
So the kid from Brooklyn, see, finally gets his shot on Broadway. Obi Toppin, the eighth pick in last month's draft, who makes his Garden debut Wednesday against the Cavs in the Knicks preseason home opener, is very excited, of course. And Knicks fans are excited to watch him. And by the way, he has a chance to be a very good NBA player. The poor Knicks, man. And by that, I don't mean, you know, the franchise. I don't root for them anymore because of Jim Dolan, the worst owner in the NBA. But just look at the futility as owner of that team. Not to mention banning Charles Oakley from the Garden and having fans thrown out for having signs saying you're a bad owner, Jim Dolan, all that stuff. But I can go on. Remember, I have a place out on Long Island and not being able to get Yankees games because he wouldn't carry Yes Network because they turned down an MSG deal and decided to make their own network and not pay him. It goes on and on with Dolan. Anyway, the point is this. The Knicks are also unlucky. It is possible to be a bad organization. Like, luck is the residue of design, as Branch Rickey said, the GM who helped break the color barrier in Major League Baseball with Jackie Robinson. Luck is the residue of design. But it is possible to independently have bad luck on top of being a bad franchise. Like, who are they going to take in the draft once they picked where they did? They're not going to get Zion. They're not going to get Ja Morant. They wind up with R.J. Barrett. Nice player. Might turn into something eventually. But he ain't there yet. And it doesn't look like he's going to be a perennial all-star. The kind of player they need. Like, forget about MVP. Even a perennial all-star. Obi Toppin. Could he be an all-star caliber player? Yeah, it's possible that he becomes a guy like that. It is possible. And he's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be amazing, Toppin said on a Zoom call Tuesday. I'm from here. I accented the wrong word. Not I'm from here. For that, I could accent the I'm. I'm from here. Ridiculous. I'm from here. I've been watching the Knicks my whole life. My family's been a fan of the Knicks since I wasn't even born. Me having an opportunity to step on the court with these guys and compete against another team is going to be amazing. I can't wait for that time to come. Think about this, Knicks fans. You fools. Why aren't you Nets fans by now? But think about this for a second. Because I was once a passionate Knicks fan. I stayed online. Back in the day, you could get playoff tickets. You had to show up the night before. You know, for those who didn't have season tickets, you could show up the night before, basically camp out on a line that went around the block by the Garden. And everyone could buy, I think, two tickets. So my late great brother Sam and I waited all night. We would get there, wait all night, and each get two tickets. So we'd have four tickets to the game. There was nothing I wouldn't have done for the Knicks. Now imagine, a lot of you still feel that way for some insane reason. Just imagine for a second that not only did you feel that way about the Knicks, but that you could do something about it. Like, a lot of times you think to yourself, oh, it'd be a dream to play for this team that I root for. But in the case of a team like the Knicks, a moribund franchise for so long, it's not just that you get to play for them. It's that you get to try to do something about all the losing, to actually be a part of restoring the franchise. Now think about what's going through Obi Toppin's mind right now. You're excited because he's an exciting player to watch, and he has a chance to be a very good NBA player. But from his point of view, it's like, damn, man, the Knicks are a laughing stock. But he's there now, and he can actually do something about it. Rockets dropped, James Harden dropped 12 in his preseason debut, but he didn't talk to the media. He's violating, which is a violation of the NBA's media access rule, because he didn't make himself available to reporters afterward. The Rockets won 112-98, if you care, over the Spurs. And he avoided answering questions about his, as a result, about his desire to be traded. And even his teammates say they don't bring it up with him. Tim McMahon of ESPN, in a very interesting article, said that the Rockets created a culture, reported that the Rockets created a culture that gave James Harden all the power. Quote, whatever James wants. How Harden has controlled Houston's every move after years of catering to James Harden. The Rockets are at a crossroads. Just James being James, they're saying. Inside Harden's cumulative impact on the Rockets' culture. This is on ESPN.com right now. And Tim McMahon's a good reporter, and he wrote a very interesting article. And I don't want to say anything like Tim McMahon is being played for a useful idiot or anything like that, because I don't think that's the case. I do think, because sometimes teams will do that. They'll take someone from the press and they'll leak information and they become a mouthpiece for the team. That's not what's going on here. McMahon talked to a lot of people and did a very good job. But I do notice that this basic idea is everywhere this morning. ESPN, The Ringer, a million different places are basically writing the same thing about how James Harden has been entitled and the team helped kind of spoil him the way a parent might spoil a child, right? And then there was a quote in McMahon's article like, if you give a kid candy every day and then one day you don't give him candy and the kid starts crying, that's not the kid's fault, that's your fault. A little condescending, don't you think? But I would say this. I don't think it's coincidental that everyone's suddenly writing the same article. It seems like the team's leaking stuff to try to discredit Harden. And for those who say, yeah, but what if it's true? I'm sure it is true. I'm sure it's true. I mean, I would suppose. So what? Harden still showed up and got busy. The Rockets, who were severely under-talented compared to other teams in the Western Conference, like, for example, the Golden State Warriors, nevertheless had the best record in the league a couple years ago and hosted a Game 7 against those Warriors. Not a Warriors team pre-Kevin Durant or post-Kevin Durant. Not a Warriors team missing Steph or Klay or KD, but a fully loaded Warriors team that just won 73 games and then added KD, had KD, Klay, Steph, Dre. I think Iggy was available for that series, if I'm recalling, maybe not. But that was a loaded team. What was the Rockets doing hosting a Game 7? What are they doing hosting a Game 7 against that team? And by the way, the Rockets went 0 for 27 from 3 during one stretch. They did not have Chris Paul. Harden was playing without Chris Paul. Had a hamstring. And still, they only lost by single digits in the worst shooting performance in the history of basketball. Against those Warriors? How's that possible? Well, one, Harden's a great player. Deserves a lot of credit. And two, this is what happens when Daryl Morey's your GM and Mike D'Antoni's the coach. So, Tillman Fertitta, the owner, who's appeared on First Take, and nice guy, and, you know, we've talked, and he's a fan of First Take and the show, and, you know, he wants to win. He expressed that to us and to the public on the show. You know, Morey and D'Antoni weren't good enough because they weren't winning championships. Well, now Tillman Fertitta is finding out how the rest of the teams live without Daryl Morey. Soon as Morey walks out the door, all hell breaks loose. Is that coincidence? Or did Morey jump a sinking ship? I think if Fertitta would have kept Morey on, they'd be all right right now. James wouldn't be demanding a trade, and Morey would be thinking how to improve the team. Now, here's the real issue. If you don't already have a superstar, good luck getting one. It's hard to get a singular kind of talent. Morey identified Harden when he was still a sixth man, brought him on to be a superstar. It turns out he was a superstar, brought D'Antoni on. Remember, everyone was like, well, can Harden really be a point guard? Yes. And took an inferior team and almost beat the Warriors. By the way, how good was that Warriors team? Well, the Cleveland Cavaliers had LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, and couldn't get a whiff. The Warriors smoked them but they couldn't smoke the Rockets. Couldn't do that. So anyway, Tillman Fertitta, look, he's gotten rid of Daryl Morey. No more Mike D'Antoni. Now Harden wants out. And suddenly, there are articles everywhere about how Harden is entitled, and it's almost like, well, the Rockets were too nice, darn it. They can't be this nice to their star players. Here are the options. Either you're going to have a superstar and he's going to be entitled, or you won't have a superstar and you won't compete. That's the NBA. Welcome to it, Tillman Fertitta and the Houston Rockets. Is there a new threat?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Going to get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think it means.
No doubt.
All right. What we got, Raj?
All right. First, let's take a listen to our friend Bill Belichick.
Pretty experienced quarterback in terms of passing game and what they did at Alabama. He gets rid of the ball very quickly, doesn't hold it much, you know, sees coverage as well, taking good care of the ball, hasn't thrown the ball to the defense, sees what he's got, understands the pressure, understands the timing of routes, gets the ball out quickly, and, you know, has enough quickness in the pocket to make it difficult for the pass rush to get to him. You know, he can run a little bit, but he's more, I would say, of a quicker guy in the pocket that's elusive and really wants to throw more than he wants to run. Again, he can run, but he really is a good passer and wants to get the ball out quickly into the passing game. He does a pretty good job of that.
So that's Bill Belichick talking about Tua Tagovailoa. What's the question?
That's a lot of praise for him. Tua and the Dolphins are in trouble versus Belichick this week.
I think the Patriots are going to win, no doubt. I think they're going to win. I thought they were going to beat the Rams, and they lost because they just don't have a lot of talent. But I feel like the Patriots are going to keep us kind of titillated throughout the season, and I'm expecting the best performance they got. By the way, you hear how Belichick talks about Tua? It's nothing fancy. The reason Belichick can win without talent or without a lot of talent, the reason people don't like what he does in the draft, for example, is he's looking for players who can do what he needs them to do. And when he looks at a quarterback, he says, okay, can you read coverages? Can you understand things? Can you get rid of the ball quickly? Can you move around in the pocket? It's never like he has the best arm or he's the most accurate passer or, oh my God, he's the fastest guy. Tua can get the job done, and that's what. And by the way, I noticed how Belichick says he hasn't thrown the ball to the defense. Belichick's teams make fewer mistakes than the other team, and that's why I expect them to win a tough game.
All right, check this out. I don't know if you knew this, but Rogue One was released 4 years ago today. Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie since the original trilogy.
Easily. Look. Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars, followed by Star Wars, then Empire, then Return of the Jedi. The next three movies, the prequels, got a bad rap because it's the kind of thing where like people threw out the baby with the bathwater. There was enough to be bad. There was enough like cringeworthy about them that people didn't like them. But the problem with the first three Star Wars was not ideas; it was execution. And there was worthwhile stuff in there. How does a republic become an empire? We've kind of almost experienced that recently in this country, right? It was prophetic in that way because it understood history. The following Star Wars, since Lucas sold the franchise, are fun movies, but they don't seem to be a continuation of the original Star Wars to me. They don't seem to have the same kind of ideas in them. So I would say Rogue One, because it's not part of the canon, it's an offshoot, is easily the best one since the original trilogy.
Plus, with Rogue One, the main thing about that, it was true sacrifice. Not one hero made it to the end of the movie. And you got the best 20 seconds of Darth Vader you ever seen, boy.
I want to see Ahsoka Tano in one of these Star Wars. Ahsoka's from Clone Wars, the cartoon series I watched with my kids.
She's in The Mandalorian. I haven't seen the season.
I only saw last season. I love The Mandalorian. It's a Western in outer space, but I haven't seen the season yet.
All right.
Boba Fett, come on, Jay, that whole Fett thing, boy, that's the best thing going. The Mandalorians are the best thing going. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, James Harden coming up. James Harden Talk, at least.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.